Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, my darlings, and welcome to the Hearts of L&P, brought to you by Late Night Poets at allpoetry.com. The group hosts shows every night of the week on a variety of topics to ensure that there is something for everyone to enjoy. And if you want to support the show, we have anthologies available on Amazon, which boast a wonderful selection of poetry offered up by the poets of our group. And speaking of our poets, with the gracious permission of several of our members, I have brought a reading list tonight for your listening pleasure. I encourage you to come in, find a comfortable seat, and make yourself at home. I am happily your host, Victoria Frost. Tonight, the poet gave me a beautiful list of life and love and laughter. After a not-so-easy show last week, I figured it would be fun to delve into the things that give us a giggle, start our week off with the mundane Monday, maybe lightened up by a little bit of joy, and perhaps madness. And as always, I have Pam here helping me behind the scenes. Pam, how are you doing tonight?
Oh, I'm doing great. Looking forward to the show.
Got some great rights here that for smiling and, just in general and enjoying the night. So very cool.
Absolutely. I'm really excited about it. We've had some people that submitted their own pieces, some that I got to reach out to and ask for their permission. It was just, I think it's going to be a really fun, hopefully giggleful, show full of giggles. And speaking of guests, do we have any on the phone just yet?
I have brought Afasiana on, so welcome, Afasiana.
Hi, thank you.
Hey,
show
Faze,
of giggles
how
sounds
are you doing?
Good. I could use a show of giggles.
Well, you know, we had last week, we had the lost life, grief and lost in life. And so I figured, you know, we've got to do something a little more lighthearted on this show, especially when we're supposed to be talking about, you know, some of the happier times of life. So I'm really, really excited about it. By chance, did you bring a right tape?
No, I'm a slacker, but I'll help you read.
You know what? It's okay to be a slacker. I still love you. All right. Well, with that being said, I'll just start off the show with one of my pieces, because I know we've got one poet calling in, or at least we'll be listening in about 30 minutes. So we'll start off with a silly little piece of my own. This was actually written because my father, he always picks on me because he goes, "You write too many dark things, you know?" And so he challenged me to write a poem about a boy who tries to steal pie. So this is "To Pick a Piece of Pecan Pie." The baker went about his day while little Johnny was out to play. The boy was dancing down the street, anxious to know what adventures he'd meet. He hopped along and skipped the cracks, avoid the hex of breaking backs, until at last he caught a sniff. Inhaling deep, he took a whiff. A cozy scent, so warm and sweet, it nearly pulled him off his feet. To float along and find the source, 'twas a pie, I say, of course. The crust was golden, perfectly cooked. The baker did always follow the book. Johnny, excited, buzzing with thrill, gazed envious at that window sill. So very quiet, he approached. He knew this pie was his to poach. And reaching up, he meant to take the sweetest treat the baker baked. A quick swoosh and then a sting. Johnny yelped, the air filled with the ring of the swatter that smacked away the pest named Johnny that came that day. To steal the pie, the baker knew. He'd had his fair share of a lost pie or two. He gave a grin and said, "Not today. Now, Johnny, do be on your way." Then closed his window with a click, just in case the boy thought he was slick, and cut his pie to have a slice. He might have shared if Johnny'd asked nice. End poem. So, Pam, would you leave comments or Faze or just whoever wants to go first on that, if they want to go first?
Oh, absolutely. Faze, yeah. You go ahead and comment first.
Well, I think that you should have brought us some pie if you were going to read about pie. Now I want pecan pie.
It is the best of all, after all.
I love the way you write his enthusiasm. You know, he's dancing down the street. And there's something about being a child who doesn't really care what anyone thinks and just kind of like skipping along and yet, you know, having that little superstitious game of not stepping on the cracks. And I'm a little bit obsessive compulsive, so I was very particular about that game as a child. I do not step on cracks. But I love the way that you bring him to life and you make the pie so real. It has its scent and it's warm and it's like everything about it. It's like you engage all the different senses, describing that the crust is golden and you have like this fun cadence to it. It was wonderful. I really enjoyed this.
Thank you, Faze.
Yeah, that was a great comment, and I have to agree. I'm so glad that your father challenged you. This is wonderfully lighthearted, and what I like is it has a sense of innocence to it, and yet also has that sense of mischief that we relate so much to little boys and children in general. And that whole idea, there's that kind of that, and I like that, you know, you go through all this humor, and then there's that bit of a moral lesson at the end where the whole idea, if only Johnny had asked nicely, he might have gotten that piece of pie. So excellent write and very well done.
Thank you, Pam. I appreciate that. It's definitely not my normal style, but it was a fun one to write. So thank you both for your kind words. All right. And Faith, I will have you take this next one. It's There's the Colored Girls by Michelle. I'm butchering names here, but if you could read that one for me, Faith, I'd appreciate it.
There's Colored Girls by T. Michelle. A multifloral yawn of white and purple milk strolling through lazy lawn in studded blackish silk. Viola is idle during a wild season, so she'll start a libel to flaunt her cute ribbons. Planted to last through spring, her pearly-centered rye, she flutters her five wings and shows off her deep dye. Whistling a husky tune, she flares up like a mast. Forever will the prune be a thing of the past. End poem.
Beautifully read, Faith. Thank you. And I love this poem. One, because I love flowers. I mean, who doesn't? But they specifically use pansies and violas, which they even note in their author's note. They come in purples, yellows, and whites and are known to symbolize memories, loving thoughts, and souvenirs, respectively. And I like that. They really kind of captured the idea of their symbolism. The violas kind of sitting idle during a wild season, and yet they flaunt their colors. They're out there. They color in a garden in a way that you can't help but look at them and think, my, those are beautiful. I'd love to have some. At the same time, there is that heart of the memories, each of them having a space almost, this idea of someone captured within its petals, or perhaps even just a, you know, if you look at it, perhaps you think of the flowers from Disney that come alive and speak to you, which of course, is always reminiscent of a fun souvenir. And so I really appreciated that while they looked at nature, they also had this kind of a deeper meaning, a memory, if you will, brought to the surface, a personification of these flowers as gatekeepers of the past. And so I really appreciated it because it just was fun and lighthearted, and yet it really held kind of a depth of its own. So I loved it. And Pam, what did you think?
I really like this one. And yeah, I like that the flowers are so symbolic of almost like human-like traits that have a deeper meaning. For some reason, I don't know why, but this reminds me, oh God, and I'm all of a sudden going to blank out. Who's the lady who wrote Pride and Prejudice?
Jane Austen, I think.
Yes. Like, these flowers remind me of Jane Austen characters, especially the one in the middle where it talks about her bright colors and how she, like the second stanza where it says, so she'll start a libel to flaunt her cute ribbons. There's something very showy, almost like the whole idea of extravagantly trying to get attention in order to catch a beau. And I really like that, and I really like she flutters her five wings and shows off her deep dye. These are flowers that you have no doubt know exactly how beautiful they are, and just an excellent write and very well done.
Beautifully said, and I love that you're reminded by the characters of Pride and Prejudice, because I can see that the little characteristics that are provided do kind of hint towards that story with its characters. So that was wonderfully said, Pam. Thank you. And Faith, having read it, what do you think?
I love it. I like the way that the flowers are brought to life. It's the details that make it, like, the real flowers come to life in terms of, like, the blackish silk, because those flowers actually do have, like, that soft, like, velvety, silky kind of feeling to those petals. The way the colors are described is really creative. But like Pam said, it does come to mind, like, these women from, I don't know exactly what time period, but, like, olden days, perhaps a little bit past Victorian, the way that they would dress and try to get attention, and it's kind of like, I just watched Bridgerton on Netflix, and they have, like, the season of trying to attract people, and, like, all throughout, I think it was spring, that was, like, their time to attract a suitor, and it feels like these flowers are going through that motion of, like, they're going to last all spring looking beautiful, and they will get, you know, pollinized to come back again next year. It was a really beautiful poem.
So I love that you kind of focused in on the time period there, because it's not really Victorian era, but, you know, of course, Pride and Prejudice is set in, going off of Pam's, Pride and Prejudice is set in around 1812, which was actually called the Era of Good Feeling. And so I really appreciate that both of you kind of hit on that, because it does have that idea of good feelings. These flowers have an idea of good feelings, and yet it hints to an era of good feelings. So I don't know. I find that really clever. So where my mind is today. All right. And up next, we have A Tuesday Night by Casey Day. And Pam, would you be so kind as to read that?
Absolutely, I'd be happy to. A Tuesday Night by Casey Day. Love is after dinner on a Tuesday night when the dishes are piled high because you are both so exhausted from the longest day, and you know that if you were to just walk away, that other person would do them. And they wouldn't say a word about it because you know they love you and you're a team. And when one side of a team isn't about to complete the task, the other side steps in. So you say, baby, go lay down. I've got it tonight. And they fight it, saying, no, I should stay and help. And you say, no, you had a long day. And they smile knowingly and kiss you on the cheek. That's it. That's what love is. Don't settle for less than that. And poem.
Beautiful read, Pam. Thank you. And I love this right by Casey Day. First and foremost, the conversation in it, to me at least, feels like something that I think all of us have had, at least hopefully everyone's had with their, at least one significant other at some time in their life. Someone who gives you the out, and yet there's that playful banter of, no, I couldn't possibly do that. And only for them to be like, no, it's okay. Like, I got it. And I appreciate that. So many love poems tend to speak about the feelings, the butterflies. And there's such an idea in society of what love should be that sometimes it doesn't catch those little things that is what love actually is. It's easy to go out and buy a bouquet of flowers. Sure, I have to think about it, but it's not a hard thing to do. It doesn't really cost them anything to do it. Sure, $5, but really it's not them making a sacrifice. And yet this poem is about someone making a sacrifice, someone bearing more of a burden because they're sacrificing that for the other person, to give them a break, to give them rest. It's a small little thing, and yet it does so much good because it shows care for the other person. It shows that you see their needs. It shows that you are recognizing a moment in time where you could be a blessing, and without being asked, you do. And that is what love is. It's not perfect. It's not always flowers and daisies and fancy meals or magical moments on balconies in the middle of the night. It's those little moments, doing a chore without being asked, telling someone to go take a nap, giving them just a break, because no one else in life will give them that, beautifully capturing that. And I appreciate it for that. So thank you, Casey, for providing us this poem for tonight. And Faith, what did you think?
Well, I like everything that you said about it. I feel the same way. I think this is a really beautiful capture of real love, of realistic love, and you know, the everyday kind of acts that make a big difference. Having someone who will help you at the end of the day when you're tired and do more than their share, perhaps, is a beautiful thing. Not because you can just mooch off of it, but because it's someone recognizing your needs. And like you say, making a little bit of sacrifice of their own. And it's not like I would die for you kind of dramatics. It's I would be inconvenienced and tired because I could just be watching TV or doing whatever, and instead I'm helping you. And I think that that's, in a way, even better because it's real and it is a connection that's the kind of person you want to live with. It's not just like the little fling. It feels real. And I appreciate that Casey writes in this way because this kind of love is often overlooked.
I love that comment, Faith. The way specifically that you said it's not dramatic, it's real. Because you did make me think of the people who are like, I would take a bullet for you. I would fight a bear for you. They're all things that supposedly you would do, but we don't know if they're ever actually going to do that because more than likely you're never going to have to take a bullet for a person and you're never going to have to fight a bear for a person. But this is real. This is that inconvenience, not because they have to, but because they want to. I think that was so perfectly said. Thank you. And Pam, what did you think?
Well, first of all, we have plenty of bears walking through our little town. So if a guy ever says he'll, you know, wrestle a bear or something for me, I'm going to shove him right in front of one and tell him to prove it. So.
Do it, Pam, and take a video for me.
Right? As he's running away from both me and the bear. But no, I thought this was wonderfully realistic. I like what you both had to say. It's a down to earth kind of love. It's an everyday love. It's those things that really matter in a long term partnership. And it's not only just about, you know, getting a break from the dishes, but someone actually noticing. I think that's to me the most important thing, is that their partner noticed how absolutely exhausted they were. So just an excellent write and very well done.
Awesome comment, Pam. Thank you. And I would agree, the fact that they noticed, that's, I think, the really telling part, you know, because it's easy to do something when you're told or asked, but to notice means that you're paying attention, you're seeing and understanding the place someone is in. And that's not always easy to do, even when you're in love with a person. I'd say it's probably harder when you're in love and you live with a person. But beautiful comment, Pam. Thank you. All right, are made of this. And I will take this read. And this is by Darkened Auras. Elegance spread across feathered bed. Thoughts of romance danced in her head. Whips, chains, and handcuffs. So much to spoil, long feathers to tickle, perhaps bring some oil. She hears his footsteps, daydreams start to crumble. Will it be passion tonight, or a quick rough and tumble? Door creaking open, her eyes got so wide, boyfriend and husband, now she must decide. That thought she quickly got to dismiss, when both started giving her kiss after kiss. A tornado of emotions, her mind in a whirl. She felt she was the world's luckiest girl. She was taken to paradise, bliss so galore, leaving her wanting and begging for more. pelted so violent, she screams at their names, ignited by passion's searing hot flame. But when it was over, and the part that is bad, she awoke to her husband saying, "Baby, who's Brad?" End poem. Oh, God, I love this poem. Can you read it again? Okay, Faze, would you start us off on comments?
Oh, that was funny. I like it. It has a good rhyme and flow to it, and it has, like, that, just the way that it says, I don't know, the baby who's Brad could be upsetting in a different context, but the way that it's written is fun, and it's just, it has a lightness to it. I like how it's like the tornado of emotions. Her mind is a whirl. There's a whimsy to this whole thing. I really enjoyed the way that it was put together.
Beautifully said. I would agree. It was so fun to me because it does come off like that whimsical idea. And there's a lot to it. It's not just this quick little thing of someone in a dream and dreaming about these things, but it kind of ends on that funny note. And maybe I just kind of took it as like Brad Pitt, and so it just made it funnier to me because, you know, who hasn't had dreams about someone, you know, some actor or whatever? Lord knows, like 2 nights ago, I had a dream about Daryl from The Walking Dead. That was a hoot. But I like it because it kind of just has this fun passion, the emotion, the feeling, the play, the idea of someone who, you know, perhaps is polyamorous, only for it to come down to the fact that it was a dream. And who hasn't said a stupid thing while they've been sleeping, be it because of a dream or because, you know, sometimes people just talk. To me, it was just completely fun. It played at the sensual and yet left with a little touch of humor. And I almost forgot to tell people who to comment first just because I was giggling so much. But I love it. It was a fantastic poem. And that was a fantastic comment, Faze. Thank you. And Pam, what did you think?
Oh, I enjoyed this. I really like Darkened Aura's writing. I've seen her a couple times or more in more like darker contests, like for the Dark Show, and so it's neat to see her writing something that's humor, and yet she still makes, you know, she makes it kind of a dark and twisted. And when I used to do a humor show, if I had to write like this, I would call the ending a punchline ending because most of the poem, You're taking it fairly seriously. You're like, okay, this woman's having this sexy dream. There's whips, there's chains, ooh la la. And then that ending, it's like a punchline. She awoke to her husband saying, "Baby, who's Brad?" And it just totally changes the whole tune of everything you read ahead of that, which I think is just wonderfully clever and excellent write and very well done.
Awesome comment, Pam. And yes, you're right. It does really have that fun lead up to that kind of humorous ending. I was actually truly surprised to find this one as I was perusing our blanket list, which is, you know, for those who are listening and perhaps don't know, we do have what's called a blanket list where people can say, yeah, it's okay, go ahead and use our works. And we still typically ask before we do, because some people have some really personal rights that they just don't want aired. And so this was one where I was looking through her work and there was a lot of really stunning dark pieces. And all of a sudden I came upon this one. I was like, oh my gosh, this is just so fun. It's sensual, it's playful. And yet that ending line just really left it with a pack, you know, punching a pack. It was phenomenal. And I definitely am thankful that I got to stumble across her as I was looking for poets for the show. So, yeah, if people are listening and they'd like to ever give their permission to be used on the show, we have a blanket list. So thank you. Thank you, Pam, for that comment. That was a fantastic comment. All right. Up next, we have Kel Smiles, and this is Flyby. And Faze, would you be so kind as to watch this? I'm thinking of The Walking Dead and watching it now. That's what we're talking about in LMP. Frank is like, how does this relate to the poem? And I was like, well, I had a dream about Daryl. It was great. Like, I don't need to go into my dream about Daryl on the air. But he's a badass. But anyway, would you mind reading this poem, Faze?
Sure. Flyby by Kel Smiles. If you see me crystal clearly driving by, what would you do? As most known for my style, driving is not a done deal. Tell what you think you saw. Was I in my vintage element or flying by on bristle wings with a stick handle to guide? Maybe you watched me glide by. Did you follow for a spell? Come on, you know to tell all your friends a story to believe. Because if I was driving by you, it would be crystal clear a vehicle. Perhaps two seats run with feet, as in Flintstones cartoon repeat. Or bewitched on a broom flying, admit it, you didn't see anything. End poem.
So I first have to say this poem just leaves me giggling. Because in her author's note, she notes that she has a lack of eyesight and therefore an inability to drive amuses her. And I think that's what is really clever about this. There are people who can't drive for whatever reason, be it eyesight, they haven't learned, they're not comfortable, they don't drive. And so to have this idea of someone seeing you driving in a world, it would have to be in a different world. And so she plays at the idea of a vintage car, perhaps the broom, perhaps it's the Flintstones. It even makes me think of the vacuum from Hocus Pocus when they couldn't find brooms, so they fly on what they can find. But it's just kind of fun and playful. And I think what I appreciate about it actually hints back to Abraham Lincoln, who says if he could not laugh at himself, then, you know, he's too serious. And so there is that humor, that playfulness of not taking ourselves so seriously, not looking at our life and being upset about it, but seeing the humor that it could be if our friends, in this case, saw us driving by. And I love that it's called a flyby because it's just, it plays with that idea. Perhaps she can't see the signs, and so she might be flying by just a little too fast. It's just, to me, really clever and really fun and playful, and I just loved it. And Pam, what did you think?
Oh, I enjoyed this. You know, a sense of humor is such a beautiful and healing thing. You know, we have to be able to laugh at ourselves. And I like how there's the questions in here where, you know, she likes to almost, like, think aloud of what other people would imagine and then what she would imagine. I have to say, though, having watched the Flintstones quite a bit throughout my childhood, that was my favorite part. Perhaps two seats run with feet as in a Flintstones cartoon repeat. That was just, I mean, the whole thing was great, but that to me was awesome. So very well done.
Awesome comment, Pam. Thank you. And you're right. She does catch that fun little details there that really bring it to life. So thank you for that. That was a great comment. And Faze, having read it, what did you think?
I really liked it. I thought it was quirky and fun, and I actually can't drive for medical reasons as well, so I relate to this because sometimes people be like, oh, I saw you driving at this place, and whatever. I'm like, no, you didn't. I've gotten a ticket. Or they tried to give me a ticket saying that, like, I was captured on some traffic cam or whatever. It was a scam. But I'm like, I guarantee you didn't because I haven't driven. So it's just having that little thing of, like, was I on a broom kind of thing. I love the way that she responds to it.
Oh, that was a great comment, Faze. And I love that. You're right. There are those scams out there that are going to try and take you for all your worth. But there is something fun and goofy when you can say, no, as everybody knows, there's those IRS scams. It reminded me of this, so I'm going off on a tangent. But everybody knows there have been for a while those big IRS scams where they call you and they threaten to arrest you and everything. And right when I first started practicing in taxation, I got my degree. I've been in public accounting for like 2 years. I got one of those calls. And to me, it was just hilarious because I immediately knew that it wasn't legitimate. And so I just was like, really? Like, you really want to play this game with me? And it definitely, I obviously irked them because I then got a phone call every single day with them just cursing me out. They had nothing better to do. So they were just going to curse me out. And I was like, really? Like, this is, but it's always kind of fun when you can get those scammers by the toes because they don't expect it. So that was an awesome comment, Faith. Thank you for sharing that with us. All right. And next we have Water the Seed by Poetic Father. And Pam, could I have you read this one? Oh, yes.
Oh, absolutely. I did want to let you know that Rakentor has joined us. So welcome, Rakentor. Glad you could join us.
Rack, yay!
It's been a while, guys. How you doing?
It has.
Welcome, welcome. So I have to say, I don't think I've gotten to have the pleasure of meeting you before, but your name I just adore because if I remember, it's basically someone who tells like amusing stories in like kind of this skillful way or anecdotes. And so I connect with that because I'm that weirdo who randomly tells anecdotal stories. So you sound like my kind of person just by your name, which might be judging a book by the cover, but that's so fun. Okay. It'll be okay.
You're right. He's awesome.
Well,
yes, that's a part of my personality for sure.
Oh, well then I'm so glad you're on the show and please don't hesitate to share some of your own anecdotal stories because I love them. Well, since you're here, I believe we do have a SoundCloud for you. So Pam, would you be willing to play that for us?
Absolutely. Just let me know when you have the poem up and you're ready for me to push play.
It is up and it's ready when you are.
Incomplete by Rakentor. There is an ache I feel deep in my soul, an emptiness in my arms only you can fill, a longing that's stalked me, eating me away over time. An end to searching for fulfillment realized when I wake to your body next to mine. Kept awake by the yearning to see the smile that accompanies your laughter. Watch today turn into tomorrow, sharing each before and after. To wrap you in my arms and bury my face in your hair. Aching, longing, and yearning dissipate in the moments I hold you there, clinging to a fantasy, dreaming of when we meet, because until the day we do, I remain incomplete. End poem.
Oh, this was such a stunning poem. I take it in two ways. The first can obviously be someone who's kind of dreaming of their ideal person, the person that they're going to be able to share those moments with. And I think what I appreciate about it is it's not the shallow kind of things. It's not the, we're going to go run off into the sunset and we're going to go on all these grand adventures. It's the little thing. It's the way that your body wakes next to theirs. It's the smile that is there when they laugh, because you can tell when someone laughs with a smile or when they're just kind of laughing to laugh, but that true joy bubbling to the surface. It's the moments of enjoying each day after the other, because not every day is good, but sometimes just having someone there is enough. Or even the scent of someone's hair, having that sense, that feeling of getting a moment just to kind of wiggle in close, bury your nose at the nape of their neck and inhale them. It's beautiful, this idea of who we yearn for, who you yearn for. it also reminds me, and perhaps it's just the picture that you chose, but it also reminds me perhaps of a soldier to go away, who it's their duty to be apart from their loved one, from their lover, from their family, and all those moments that lead to it, the inconsistent calls, the, as try as they might, the technology that just doesn't make it as easy to talk when you're half a world away, and getting to wait until that moment, till they're back in your arms, till you get to do all those things once again. Because when you are in the heat of battle, when you are that far away, and each day there is something that threatens your life, it is those little things that kind of keep you going, those little moments, because you don't get a care package every day. You don't always get to talk to them every day. But sometimes just a reminder of those little things is sufficient. It's just beautiful and tender and gentle and touching. And the way you read it was just so stellar for this topic. And so I loved it. Thank you for sharing this.
Yeah, thank you. I saw Ooey Gooey and I thought of that one, so.
Well, you definitely fulfilled the Ooey Gooey. I love it. I absolutely love it. And Pam, would you mind sharing your thoughts?
Yeah, this is absolutely beautifully written. It's heartfelt. I like it all the way through. My particularly favorite lines are, kept awake by the yearning to see the smile that accompanies your laughter. You know, there's something about being either in a relationship, whether it's a friendship or a romantic relationship, where you laugh together and the person's laughter brings you joy. And I liked that, and I liked the whole idea of feeling like you remain incomplete until you find that someone, whether that someone's already in existence or it's simply just, as Victoria was mentioning, the idea of that someone who you know is right for you, a feeling that incompleteness and knowing that at some point you'll be made whole, or hoping that at some point you'll be made whole. Just absolutely beautiful and very well done.
Thanks, Pam.
Beautifully said, Pam. And I do, I agree. I like that idea of one day being made whole, being made complete, because there are those people that just seem to click into your life and just fulfill something that you didn't have there before. So that was really beautifully said. And Faith, what did you think?
I think it's beautiful. I'm really glad that we had the audio for it because your voice was just perfect with the tone to go with it. And the way that you write is so full of the longing that you're expressing here that I thought it was just perfect. I like that you talk about like being kept awake by the yearning, because that is kind of like that moment that tends to catch people the most. It's like as you're trying to fall asleep, you and when I say you, I don't mean like you, I mean like people obsessed over like what they don't have. I think that this is really great, and there's such intimate kind of like small moments that are what really matters. So like everyone said, the laughter, the face in the hair, like those little things. It's not like overly sexualized or like very dramatic. It's like the little intimate moments, and I think that that's really beautiful.
Thanks, Faith.
Perfectly said, Faith. Thank you. And I'd be a broken record repeating it, but I agree with Faith. I love those little things that you captured, because it does just lighten the mood. It captures those little nuances. And I do believe we have an alien who snuck in.
An invasion.
So, okay, you do that. And you actually, okay, this is another anecdotal story because I'm triggered by these things. I have wireless headsets that I work with. I always have like one in my ear because I don't know. I have to have my murder mysteries while I'm doing tax returns. Otherwise, I might murder someone else. But I walked away from them too far. I like printed a return and I walked over to our processing room to grab it and bring it up to be all put together. And my headset disconnected from my phone, and it did that. It went do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do. And I was like, this mofo's telling me I'm in the Twilight Zone. So, anyways, that has no point other than you reminded me of it. This is my life. I just share random facts that nobody cares about and doesn't go anywhere. But it's great, and I love it.
Okay. Next time I'll do the Outer Limits.
Yes! All right. Well, up next, I'm going to have us read Poetic Picasso's piece, The Big Fool, and then I'm going to have Rex be put on the spot. But Pam, would you mind reading this next one for us?
I would be happy to do that. All right. This is The Big Fool by Poetic Picasso, and it goes like this. What if everyone in this cocktail party could read my thoughts and knew all the odd things I was thinking? The woman with the big wig or the man with the big nose knew how much I could make a wreath from her hair or a coat hanger from his nose. What if the supposed connoisseur of wine knew I had thought of filling his glass with an insipid bit of my spring shower? What would the servants do if I put blue on the carpet the guests entered so that their polished shoes would stick like slimy mucus? Or what if I plucked out of the eyebrows or took out the teeth of the old Earl chewing food with a pair of steel tweezers, or used a hairpin to awake the snoring duchess sleeping in the settee, or put liqueur on her hubby's parted hair? I could put a fork in the tongue of the garrulous nobleman from Paris to stop him from prating. I would take the Cuban cigar from the American ambassador's mouth and burn his hideous bow tie. If I dared to do these things, I would be acknowledging my boredom and lack of savoir-faire as a Victorian. To make them feel, fret, and entertain myself with such delightful diversion would make the night of this engagement even more exciting. Oh, I know it's wicked to think these things, but I can't help to have the witty need to laugh at them each with my satire. So I got the courage to gain the attention of all and to tell them how tedious they were and how much of an arse they were. But something unusual happened before I could tell them what I felt. I had torn my trousers completely. I realized then I was not wearing any underwear, and everyone had noticed that except me, the big fool, the caricature. Indeed, it was a full moon they saw, so I suppose the joke was on them, and it was I, with the wry humor. There is only one thing in life worse than being talked about, and that is not being talked about. End poem.
Oh, this was such a delightful poem. Oh, my goodness. And I love the story that Frank has told in this, all the little judgments that he has standing there, the woman with the big wig, the man with the big nose, wanting to pull out someone's teeth. Just each of them have these fun little ideas because we always have those hidden thoughts, those hidden little agendas. As much as we're always told, you know, oh, don't worry about what people think. They're probably not really paying attention. This hits on that fear of the person who stands in the corner judging us all. And let's be honest, there's probably been at least once or twice in our life where we've just seen someone in a crowd and we've made a judgment just because some people, you know, we do that. I'm not even going to say some people. I'm pretty sure everybody has done that. And not that it's great, but it's part of us. And so I appreciated, especially at the end, that the joke ended up being on him. After all those judgments, he's the one who's going to be talked about that night. He's the man who, and I like the way he said it, indeed it was a full moon they saw. So I suppose the joke was on them, and it was with the wry humor, and it was I with the wry humor. So that whole little like play on words of someone showing their ass to the crowd, making a bit of humor out of embarrassment was just, it was delightful. It was a fun, clever write that really just kind of led up to that moment after all those little judgments. And then, of course, ending it with the only one thing in life worse than being talked about, and that's not being talked about, because we all want to be memorable, even if it's because we tore our trousers. Just truly a fun little piece. And Rex, what did you think?
Yeah, I like the way Frank writes his style, and that this is pretty cool. When, like you were saying, when someone stands in the corner and they judge you, you almost can read their mind, because it's usually shows on their face that they're doing it more often than not, I would say. But it's to be able to play it off and you know, just be at a party and notice things like that and act like nothing's going on is kind of hard to do. But you know, the snap judgments that go around while you're at the party, you could almost imagine that you hear it sometimes too, within the din of the clinking of the glasses and everything. You know, some people start to feel self-conscious. You know, someone's staring. It's like, you know, they're looking at me. You know, and then you know, the ending where he turns it around, like you said, was a great twist. And really probably the only way that you could end this in a sensible way, where his pants are the ones that rip, and that quote, I don't remember if it was Churchill or not that said that, but I like that quote, because there's a lot of truth behind that too, and the
it
whole thing.
It's Oscar Wilde.
Oh, even better. Okay.
The last
thank
two
you.
Lines are a quote from Oscar Wilde.
Yeah. Thank you, Pam. Yeah, I recognize it I just didn't realize who
it was attributed to.
Yeah, that's a very true statement in a lot of ways, because you know, even when people are talking about you, you kind of want them to be saying the positive things, and he's talking about both ways. Anyway, I'm prattling on about nonsense, so I'm done. Nice poem, Frank.
No, that was a great comment. I appreciate it. And you're right. There is always kind of that apparent nature when someone stands in the corner of the room and just sits and judges. And Frank really did do a great job of weaving that quote in from Oscar Wilde that just, it fits really, really well. So that was a fantastic comment, Rock, I'm sure. So thank you for that. And Rex, what did you think?
Well, I'm walking on that line of Oscar Wilde in the layout and thought, but also a little James Joyce when it came down to the actual notice of I'm not wearing any underwear and my pants were split. Oh, hey, you're really going to get noticed? Why don't you just make it perfect? Bend over and let one rip.
Oh, my goodness. I love that, Rex. I love it. Oh, thank you for that. That was perfect. And Faith, what did you think?
I feel like this like amped up my social anxiety so bad. I'm like picturing being at the party, being judged for all the things, but also worrying about people hearing my thoughts. It's like all the anxiety all at once. I really enjoyed the way that he did it. It was funny. It was very detailed in the analysis of the people, and I do love the quote at the end there. I'm really enjoying all of his Oscar Wilde poems. He's been doing like quite a series of them, and I think that this is wonderful.
Oh, that was a phenomenal comment, Faith, and I would agree. It definitely created some social anxieties in this, because who doesn't fear essentially being pantless in front of a crowd after you've judged everybody? Your comment actually reminded me of a TikTok that I saw. It was a guy who his dad was in town, and I mean, I'm always like cautious of like how many of these are real, because it's social media and people are you know, people are doing things to get whatever kudos is my word. I'm too old now to know what other words the youngins use, but they're trying to get their kudos. And so it was this guy who's like, you know, my family's in town, my dad's in town. So I went out to go and meet him for lunch. And I realized that I didn't have my mask because all these people were staring at me. So I go back home, and that's when he realized he went out of the house without any pants. And so that kind of, your comment reminded me of that, because who hasn't had that fear of people being able to hear their thoughts or somehow just being exposed just because we didn't think. So that was a comment phase. Thank you. And Pam, having read it, what did you think?
Oh, I thought this was wonderfully clever. I like how it's, you know, there's a very egotistical personality who just out of pure boredom sits around, you know, judging everybody else for all their little flaws. And then, of course, you know, they got their full moon hanging out and just, you know, wonderful humor, excellent phrasing throughout. Oh, my goodness. Yeah, some of these words were just, they were a bit of a challenge, but fun to read. And I like how he doesn't just stop at the fool. He says the caricature, like the whole idea of being a person so on display that you feel more like a cartoon. I like also how he says, oh, I know it's wicked to think these things, but I can't help to have the witty need to laugh at them each with my satire. You know, like the idea that satire, you know, is just such an important part of society back in the Victorian ages and even nowadays. So just an excellent write and very well done.
Oh, Pam, that was such a stunning comment. And I, too, agree that he really did a good job of creating this character, someone on display, a caricature, which is typically, you know, a picture that doesn't really represent reality. It represents, you know, the things that stand out. So, you know, if someone has a large nose, it's going to be even larger. If someone has big ears, they're going to be even bigger. And so this does have that Victorian humor and yet has the big ego being knocked down a peg, all because he was an ass and the ass was bigger. So that was just a really awesome comment, Pam. Thank you. All right. And up next, we are going to put Rex on display. And Rex, if you would be so kind as to read your piece.
All righty. How doth one see the sound in your music? Come, batter me in rhythmic pulsing surge, where viracocha kissed the soft curve of warmth spread upon those amber sands beaching your vowels. Yin-yang keys tickling toe dip, as above, so below. I breathe a crash, wade in the glow of Caradwyn's embrace, and see that sound rumbling a centered verse and crusting your Milky Way diamond-lit shadow. Now, give me your wild piano concertos so that I may thrive within your saxophone congress, beat awash in notes roiling across moist fingers, alive in the swell of your tempest. I am but teak, timbered in the palms of oceanic depths, teal sails cresting, a whistle curling through porpoiseful cobalt pinwheels, seizing shared breaths, eyeing horizon's burnt umber, soliloquy, and pauses.
Oh, Rex. If this is not a love poem, I want it written for me. I love the way that you kind of have the play on words. The idea first of the musical components, the rhythm, the piano, the crashing, almost like a concerto, the saxophone, so the saxophone, kind of in this idea, you've created a symphony, and yet in each one, you've caught notes, no pun intended, of what love and an intimate moment between two people could be. The idea of the wild piano really kind of gives me the idea of the noises and the nuances that people make when they are vulnerable and honest and free and just caught up into that moment. At the same time, you've played on words with the idea of water, of this vast body of water that the sea, S-E-A, is there. And of course, you bring that in too with this idea of waves, the warmth of perhaps the amber sand, which could be hinting at how someone is pliable, or perhaps the heat of skin that's been sun-kissed. Because let's be honest, someone who has a tan, I swear, is always warmer than someone who doesn't. And I'm a very pale woman, so I know for a fact I'm not always as warm as I'd like to be. But then, of course, the idea of tickling toe deep, this idea of sticking your toes in the sand, or perhaps just enough so that the waves curl over them and enjoy that little caress of them, understanding the beauty and the mystery of a woman as you look upon her in the middle of the night, catching the stars from the sky, and perhaps even seeing the bioluminescent algae down below who blossom in their own galaxies in the vast darkness, understanding that there will be things that will take years to explore and you still might not know all of her. And then, of course, the little play on words with purposeful, being purposeful, this idea of being able to dive within her depths and enjoy watching the sunset, not with her, but perhaps understanding the beauty that there is a glow that can come about her in just the right moment. It's beautiful. It gives this idea of perhaps the earth talking or land talking to the ocean, that moment where they come together, that juxtaposition, where they get to meet and just play for a moment with each other, the yin and the yang, as above, so below, hinting at heaven and hell, and understanding that there is ways in which we are completely inhabitable or uninhabitable to each other, and yet so wanting to dive within those depths. It is deep and beautiful and complex, and yet at the same time, you've woven your words in such a whimsical, musical way that it just catches you up, and you cannot help but smile at the end of it. If this is not a love poem, I do not know what is. And God, I wish that this was written for me. I need to find someone who writes like you, Rex, so that they can write like this for me, because this was stunning. So thank you for sharing this with us.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that.
Absolutely. Well deserved. And Pam, would you mind sharing your thoughts?
Oh, I really like this. And the nice, the wonderful thing about Rex's poetry, well, there's so many wonderful things about it, and I really liked your comment, Victoria. It was beautiful. But first of all, the way he lays out his stanzas, so it just keeps your attention constantly and plays with words. This actually reminds me of the, was it the dark show that we just did, Me, You, and Aphasiana, where there was the rites about the sea. There's kind of this whole, like, it comes across as a love poem, but it also comes across as if it's the personification of a ship talking to the ocean, or of a sailor expressing their love for the ocean. And I like that you mentioned I am teak, but timbered, because teak was used for shipping, if I remember right. And it's well known for being very durable and waterproof. And that also adds kind of to the romantic side, too, because I think, if I remember right, it has a leather-like smell, which kind of, you know, you instantly think of that kind of the smell of, well, a man, like a cologne. I also like how you weave music into here a lot, because nature, and especially the ocean, large bodies of water, have such a music of their own, but it's not, they don't create it on their own. You know, like when you have two people who love each other and they create music together, the ocean can't do anything on its own. It needs the wind, it needs the moon in order to move and create that sound that it does. I just think this is beautifully layered and thought-provoking, and I really like it all the way through. So very well done.
Thank you, Pam.
That was a really beautiful comment, Pam. And I appreciate that you really caught on to perhaps even a sailor on a voyage appreciating the ocean or even a ship in a journey, because I can see that. I think there's validity to that. And, again, it's that beautiful depth that I think Rex really just brings to your work, or that you bring to your work, Rex, where there can always be perhaps two different ways to take it or even more, but both of them are equally fascinating. Just really, really beautifully.
It's definitely layered to get many responses.
Well, you so do it well.
Any interpretation is not wrong.
Well, that's, you do a good job of that, and really you do it. You do the layering very well. And Raconteur, what did you think having heard this?
Yeah, I really enjoy the way Rex writes. His use of language is nothing short of brilliant as far as I'm concerned. I always love the way he tells a story that, like you say, the metaphors have way more than one meaning, and the more you dig into it, the more you can pull out of it. Like Pam was saying, with the ocean and the ship on the ocean, lending itself to the story, as well as, you know, it being, you know, an affair between two people, you know, by taking the theme of his metaphors and stringing them together like that, he makes his poems really very, very, intricate and layered, like he was just saying. And I really appreciate that a lot about the way that he writes. And then he's got a very varied vocabulary also, and he pulls out words like reticulated, and you got to know that I was going to bring up that poem, because everyone talks about that poem. you know, he kind of makes you think, and you know, I really appreciate that as well, because, you know, as much as I love words and as many, you know, things that I pick up, I just always appreciate learning something new, and he never fails to bring that out.
Thank you very much, Rack. I appreciate that.
Fantastic comment, Rack. And you're right, he does have a masterful way of writing that really does kind of teach us. But I swear that Rex just writes with a dictionary or a thesaurus, just pulling out all the words that I didn't know existed. So it's a wonderful vocabulary lesson, and yet at the same time, he does it so seamlessly. And Faze, what did you think?
Well, I agree. Rex always teaches me something. There's always at least one word that I'm like, do I understand what that means? And I have to look it up. But I also like the way that he plays with words that are more common, using the little apostrophes there to add the kind of the accent to it and change the way that it's read aloud, or at least in my mind. And I love the form of it. I think Pam was the one who pointed out that the way he kind of varies his stanzas in spacing really keeps your attention, and it sort of felt like the waves that he's talking about. I really liked "I breathe a crash." There's some really great word choices in here, as always, and it's so articulate and interesting.
Oh, thank you, Faze.
Beautifully said, Faze. Truly. All right, up next, we're going to have "Come Take Me On" by Christopher S. And I will give this one a read. Come, take on my foibles and quirky peccadilloes. Massage my sore ego. Wake my slumbering id. Temper eruptions of my inflated bravado. Walk me back gently from cliffs of poor judgment. Come, take me on. Distinguish politely my monologue rambles. Suffer sweetly my vain introspections and false calls for mercy where no punishment stays. Laugh sadly against my poor taste in humor. Come, take me on. bear softly irrational chains of self-loathing, tear at my barricades of sudden misgiving, guide me toward sweet scents of acceptance, lead me down winding paths of atonement, and sing to me lasting songs of forgiveness. Do all of these things, for no one else cares. Come, I beg you come, for it is only you who dares. End poem. And Rack, would you mind starting us off on comments?
Wow. I mean, I get the impression of an egomaniac looking for someone to, I don't even want to say love, because it sounds more like I don't know how to put it. It's just the ego in this is what screams to me more than anything. You know, he's all about himself in this, and he's saying, "Come take me on," like I guess. No one's worthy. And again, to me, that speaks of the ego in this. It's a different voice to me than I would consider for a love poem. Reading it, I like the flow of it, but you know, again, because of the content and the way he's talking about it, it's kind of rubs me the wrong way in a lot of ways, as far as, you know, social whatever. But you know, as a poem, as art, I can appreciate it. I can understand it. You know, I kind of take it a little as being, you know, tongue in cheek, and he's not really saying that he's all these things. It's more, I guess, boasting it, kind of poking at somebody, boasting about, you know, how great that they are, and looking for someone to love them. That's kind of what I say.
I think that that's a fair interpretation. I can definitely see where you're coming from, because there is an understanding there, or a word usage in this, where I can see that it would look like someone who's almost narcissistic in understanding that they have all these problems, but it's not their problem to solve. They need someone else to solve it. And usually when someone believes that, they're never going to really have anyone who can solve it, because they can never do it right. Personally, as someone who has a general anxiety disorder, I developed a general anxiety disorder over my life, and someone who comes from significantly traumatic background, I can understand this. Trying to not feel like I am worthy of love, that I am worthy of the kind of love that I want, because I'm damaged goods, because I do have a temper. I doubt anybody on the show would know, but I come from a long line of tempers, including a Ukrainian background, a German background, and an Irish background. So I have a temper. Not always good. But as someone who knows what my faults are and struggles with self-worth and struggles with anxiety, it can often be very apparent to me all the reasons that I am not worthy of love. The idea that my ego has been bruised, and therefore I'm not sure of myself when it comes to a lover and the worthiness of being loved. When it comes to, and I liked the ego and the id, because the id is going to be more of those innate instinctive impulses. And I definitely have those. I have those knee-jerk reactions that aren't always healthy. I'm really terrible at communicating how I feel, which is funny because we're poets and we like to talk about our feelings. But I can understand when I'm angry, but in the moments when I'm really angry and when I'm really sad or when I'm depressed, I'm not always able to vocalize why I feel those ways. And so for someone to say, you know, politely extinguish my monologues rambling, I can kind of get that, because let's be honest, everyone knows that I give great comments, but I also ramble. I have those anecdotal stories. I'm going to tell people stuff, and they don't have any purpose other than, oh, yeah, hey, you reminded me. there are there are those vain introspections where I sit there and I'm like, I'm better than this. You know, I connect with that. I have moments where I have those chains of self-loathing. I have moments when I mistake things because it triggers a past. So I've spoken about it on other shows, but I went to sleep when I was 18 and I woke up to my boyfriend being, I woke up to a phone call telling me that my boyfriend had committed suicide when I'd gone to sleep with him telling me never to forget that he loved me. So I have misgivings. I have issues that when people, I call it poofing, when someone poofs on me, even if it's not because I've done anything wrong, I go into a panic. So I have those ideas of misgivings that can trigger things that people are like, whoa, hold on, like, what's going on? Because I have abandonment issues, let's be honest, like, I'm not perfect. And so I can connect with this because to me, where I can see that, I can see where you're coming from and it's valid. By all means, it's valid. I also can see where this is an expose on how damaged someone can be and them begging, give me a chance. I know I'm not worth it. I know that I don't really have much to offer. I know I come with a ton of baggage, but give me a chance. Work with me through it. It's going to be hard, but work with me through it. And so I think that's why I personally really liked it. Not that yours is wrong, Rack. That was a fantastic comment. And I don't want you to think that I'm telling you you're wrong, because I don't think you are. But just to me personally, it spoke on that level. So thank you for sharing that, Rack, because I do think it is valid. So with that being said, now that everybody knows what a shitty person I am, Pam, what did you think?
Which name did you say? I'm sorry.
You, Pam. I'm tossing the bouquet to you.
100% sure, because, yeah, there's just my phone made some odd noise. And so, but first of all, I have to say that this reminds me of the song from A-ha, Take Me On, or Take On Me. Remember that from the 1980s? Oh, wait, no,
yeah.
You're younger than me. Never mind. Yeah, so I'm glad somebody does. That was like one of the all-time first videos ever to come out that was just, I don't know, but but the thing is, I totally relate to, you had such an excellent comment, Victoria, and I relate to the temper thing. If you ever encounter a moment with me where there's dead silence and then I let out a banshee-like scream, that's like my reaction to my top level of temper. And I like the flaws. I like what both you and McIntyre had to say, and I like how the flaws that are exposed within this poem. But I think to me, there's more than just the flaws being presented or the ego being presented. It's the whole idea of trusting somebody with those flaws. You know, take me on. I don't necessarily see it as an ego thing, but maybe, and I could be wrong, maybe it's more of a thing of finally meeting that someone that you think you can open yourself up to and say, hey, this is me, and these are all my flaws, this is my temper, this is my ugliness, this is my insecurities, and I believe you can handle them. And to me, that kind of gives a sense of trust. But just a very intriguing write and well done.
I really appreciate that comment, Pam, especially where you say that it's someone offering up the opportunity to trust. They're giving their trust, kind of like that 10 feet of rope to hang ourselves with, but this perhaps is a little more hopeful. And so I do really appreciate that, because sometimes we do give that 10 feet of rope in hopes that we won't be proven wrong. So, beautiful comment. Thank you. And Rex, what did you think?
Well, let me see. Walk me back gently from cliffs of poor judgment. I'm going to go walk off that cliff. To me, this is a call, a plea for that better part of self to entreat that which lays dormant. He knows it's there. He knows his issues. Like he had before, those peccadilloes, the thought, the ego, and id. He's talking deeply about himself, and he knows there's something else that he can do to help correct before he actually gets to someone who might take him on fully, because he has to take himself on first. And that's the call, that inside voice pleading with the one that's kind of quiet and submissive. Yo, speak up. I need help here.
Oh, I love that interpretation.
And on a note to your heritage, does that mean you give out the evil eye while drinking people under the table and telling them, we have ways of making you talk?
Well, I'll never tell, but maybe on one night you'll find out. I will have to tell you a story some other time, because there's definitely not a good drinking habit through my Ukrainian grandmother. There's a very funny story about how much she lacked alcohol tolerance, but I definitely inherited my mother's, and I can drink 7 bottles of wine without an issue. So maybe one day you will find out. But that was a great comment, that idea that perhaps this is first beseeching ourselves to better ourselves, to be better, and understanding that there is something wrong and that we have to take those first steps. So I do really appreciate that, because I'm personally in that journey of trying to be better. Not that, and nobody else is. I think that we all strive to be better, but I appreciate what you say, that introspective look. That was beautifully insightful. Thank you. And Faze, would you mind finishing us off with a comment?
Well, everyone said like so much that it's hard to follow, but I kind of felt the same way as you did, Victoria, probably because I have a similar messed up past. So I feel like I see a little bit of myself in this. I liked the part where it says, bear softly irrational chains of self-loathing, tear at my barricades of sudden misgivings. I feel like it's like asking someone to like help me hate myself less and take on a little bit of this. And help me break down those walls and be able to open up. I really liked those two lines. But I also see where Rack was coming from in some of it. I think that there are many ways to take this poem, and I really like the way that it was put together.
Absolutely. And I would agree that this is a lot. There are a lot of different ways. There is that beseeching of someone to take them on. There is definitely that tone of this is how I am, take it or leave it. And that actually does remind me of my brother-in-law, my sister's husband. She and he were in counseling for a little while before they were restationed. And at one of their sessions, he said, I know I'm abusive, but I'm not changing. You have to take me how I am. And so I can see Rack's interpretation, because there are those people that say, these are all the things wrong with me, but you're going to have to take me on as I am. And then, of course, I loved Rex's interpretation of an introspection. It definitely hits on multiple fronts, that different people can pull different things from it, much like Rex's layered poetry. Not that he's the only one, but there is that beauty of being able to see those other insights. And it was beautifully done. So that was a phenomenal comment, Faze. Thank you. And speaking of Faze, up next we have The Story of the Sun and Moon by Sandra Lee. And Faze, would you be so kind as to read this one for us?
Of course. The Story of the Sun and Moon by Sandra Lee. Before the art of Rumi, Amerithyne trees towered over the glades like outdoor poetry that stood with my people, who split wooden hickory upon the open grain beneath northern lights, while lake waters washed the wilderness from their foot soles as their headdress blew back and forth with an empress moon rose to her place at the sacred fire, and their blood brother sun gave the earth her body with a heartbeat for her rib chamber, where he drew the stars up through her breast, throwing them skyward into nightfall. End poem.
Beautiful read, Faze, and a fantastic write by Sandra Lee. I do want to mention in the author's note, it says, in honor of Lu Yu, which she doesn't want to honor Lu Yu, she's awesome, a Blackfoot sister, the Native American people, and ancient storytelling. It is also an honor to her Blackfoot grandfather, who was born 147 years ago in 1872, which is just beautiful. But I think what I really appreciate about this is that not only is there a moment that is captured of someone connecting with nature, but also the understanding of how things work together, not just with the sun pulling the stars from the Mother Earth or the moon, the Empress Moon, which oversees the night, but there's also the idea of how love can give. And that's one thing I've always appreciated about Native American culture is that there is that understanding of relationships, not just of deities and the sovereignty of nature in and of itself, but there is a relationship that you see in their lore, in their beliefs, in their culture that European culture really kind of lost. To some extent, Greek culture didn't even touch on it because while they wanted to explain nature, they didn't see how it all worked together. And so to me, this poem really has a beauty of how things work together, how the relationships come together with the earth and the sun giving each other not only life, but fruitfulness, both in the stars at night and the harvest of the day, that the Empress Moon watches over the night, keeping the poetry of the trees sacred, the way that people stood with them strong. It's just a beautiful connection that I see in this, as well as an appreciation for life, for how things are brought together, for how perfect a moment can be, not because it's been manufactured, but just because you happened to sit in a lake, washing your feet, enjoying a breeze with a full moon basking down upon you. Sometimes there's just magic there, and we have to honor it. So I think this is just a stunning rite. And Rex, what did you think?
I like that opening line before the Art of Rumi. There's a nice touch to people don't look back far enough to actually read into creation stories like you get from American Indians, Aztec, Inca, Toltec cultures. Even you go back to Egypt and Sumeria and all those other cultures before they got really big and they embellished. You have these creation stories of how the earth was born, how the first people came to be, and that's all it is about. And it came through the thought of actually living with and knowing the nature, which is what most people have forgotten. Like the American Indians knew just by watching how nature worked itself, they used to burn off the huge swaths of the plains each summer, knowing that come the next spring, there would be more fruitful grain and grasses that would grow across those plains. They refed by learning from lightning strikes, just like the peoples down in the Aborigines in Australia did the same thing, and other cultures. But it speaks to those little touches of knowledge, which most people have forgotten, which still lingers with the older folks who understood the natural order of the world itself and our makeup with that world. Wow, it's awful quiet in here.
Oh, okay, I'm going to get Victoria dropped. Yes, she did. All right, so why?
Hey, it wouldn't be a show if she didn't drop once.
Right, or, yeah, exactly. And but great comment there, Rex. And Afasiana, correct me if I'm wrong, but you haven't commented yet, have you?
That's true. I really liked the part where it says, when an Empress Moon rose to her place at their sacred fire, And the way that it refers to the sun as the blood brother and talks about the earth getting her body, there's such a beautiful explanation and connection to nature, and that she feels the heartbeat and, like, draws in the stars. It's just beautiful in all of the descriptions, and I feel really connected to this legend. It makes me want to be outside and kind of connect with the earth.
Beautiful comment, Dave. Unfortunately, I dropped and missed half of Rex's, but from what I was hearing, it was fantastic, especially as you said, Rex, about the hidden knowledge that is there, but we've just forgotten, because I think that as a society, we have forgotten a lot of things. And Faith, I agree, this really does make you want to go out and reconnect. The way that it's described really does make me want to run to a lake and connect with that. And so I appreciate that you hit on the detail and how it pulls us back out into nature, because sometimes we are a little far from it. And Rack, what did you think?
Yeah, Rex touched on what struck me the most as well when he mentioned that first line, the art of Rumi, before the art of Rumi, rather. The idea of the moon, you know, going as far back as, you know, the beginning of creation. So things started way back when, before all of that. And that was the sense of what I got from this as well. I wouldn't say hidden knowledge, but I guess it is hidden knowledge. It's the lessons that were revealed that as time goes on. I don't know. My mind's all muddled now. I don't know what I just did. I'm sorry.
You did good. No. Don't say sorry. You did good. And I do. I think that you, from what I was understanding, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but from what I was understanding, basically, we often think of creation as the time when we start taking note of history, when we start having these mythos that we follow and adhere to, but really things have been going on long before the mythos were ever created, long before the Art of Rumi, long before we had these stories, life was already happening. And so there's a beautiful calling back to that, to this understanding that nature doesn't need us. We just happen to be the ones to dictate its story, if I'm understanding correctly. But I think that was a fantastic comment, truly. So thank you, Rack. I appreciate that.
You're too kind.
No, you're the one who commented. I just expanded what I understood. So I appreciate you. Please know that. And Pam, would you mind sharing a few thoughts?
Oh, my goodness. Well, everybody's had such wonderful comments all the way through that it's really difficult to follow. But I just adore this, because it's about how the different parts of the earth work together and how they balance each other and they give to each other. And it's beautiful all the way through, but I especially like while lake waters wash the wilderness from their foot soles, you know, because it's that whole idea of washing somebody's feet as an act of service. And so therefore, the water washes the feet of the earth as an act of service. And I also like gave the earth her body with a chamber for her rib, with a heartbeat for her rib chamber where he drew the stars. And so it's that the creation of the earth isn't something meant to be like dull and dead. It is something meant to be something powerful and living. And I think you just all had such beautiful comments, and this is very well done.
I think that was such a beautiful comment, Pam. I appreciate that you showed that there is servitude and purpose and life in this, that in this the waters wash the feet because they are choosing to serve, that creation was an act of life, not just things came together and it was purposeful and caring and intended to be good. And so I think that was a really stunning comment, Pam. So thank you for that, truly. And up next, we have the ever wonderful Neutron. And Rex, would you mind giving this one a read for us?
Sure. I like the title. I Cannot Afford Harry Carey Again by Neutron Bomb. My chest and my loins are constricted, conflicted from running through life with scissors, metal blades pointing out, waiting for a pothole to trip over and impale myself. Infatuation is like a mound of weeds, insidiously insisting on overstaying. I repel the everlasting like two magnets of the same polarity. And Paul.
I love this. Neutron has such a way with words that it describes in detail these concepts. So even if someone didn't know what Harry Carey is, you know, ritual suicide, she gets the point across. Essentially, I don't have time to die. My chest and my loins are constricted and conflicted from running through life with scissors, metal blades pointing out. I mean, whose mother hasn't told them, don't run with scissors, you're going to kill yourself? And yet, as she's waited to trip over these potholes and impale herself, she finds that she continues to repel these things. She continues to find that infatuation infects her life, giving her a reason to perhaps not quite find one of those potholes just yet. That life insists on her overstaying, because there are many times when we think this place is not meant for me, but we haven't found the last reason to go. There's always going to be, or there should always be, that extra little purpose to stay just a little bit longer. I know you said you had to go in 5 minutes, but perhaps you just, we've got one more drink. We've got hot chocolate next. We were thinking of maybe making some s'mores. You know, maybe you want to go and sit down by the lake with us. There's always that one more good reason to stay. And so, as she says, I repel the everlasting like two magnets of the same polarity. They just don't come together. Even though there's all these attempts, she doesn't have time. She can't afford to just end it. There's still too much to do. Even if it's not always what we want, it's dark. And yet at the same time, it has this understanding that you can always find at least one more reason, even if it's not something that we necessarily want. But if we're willing to delay it, is death really what we always wanted? Dark and beautiful and thought-provoking, but so beautifully done. And Rex, what did you think?
I'm sorry. Go ahead, Rex.
Sorry, I wasn't clear. I was saying Rex and Tour. I combined your guys' names. My fault. Totally my fault. But Rex and Tour, if you will be so kind.
Yeah, well, you're probably better off getting Rex to comment first. Anyway, the expressions that she's throwing around, I like the opening line. I mean, I can't dig too much below the surface on this one, I don't think. The Harry Carey, the fact that she mentions again, you know, you obviously can't kill yourself more than once. So, you know, I found that clever, you know, alluding to the fact that, you know, she can't die again. That's a nice statement in itself. And then she goes on to say about running with scissors and magnets repelling each other. But the overall message that she's saying about, you know, the weeds being infatuation being a mound of weeds, I mean, I'm totally confused. I don't know, maybe because it's so late. I'm usually not around at this hour. I guess I'm sleeping in medication and whatnot, so I'm not at my best right now. I apologize. I'm a little confused with this one.
No. You're doing great. Please don't think that you aren't. And it definitely is late. So I've called into Rex's show a few times, and I was like, be warned, I'm on sleeping pills. So it's going to get interesting. I'm pretty sure I've had some pretty out there thoughts during those times. But no, you really are doing great. And I do like that you say that there's, you know, she doesn't have time to commit suicide one more time. She can't die one more time. Sometimes we've attempted it once and we just haven't had the means or the time or the will to do it a second time. It makes us reconsider life. So I do appreciate that comment because I think that there is validity to it. So thank you for that, truly. And Rex, what did you think?
I like the opening. My chest and my loins are constricted, conflicted. They're on the same page. There's want and need running right there. The next two, it seems kind of a running amok, a free form, just on the loose, so to speak. And then waiting for a pothole, you know it's coming, and both left feet are going to hit at the same time, and you're going to fall over. And the thought with the infatuation, like a mound of weeds, infatuation grows. You get that little wisp, and all of a sudden, the weeds, they get thicker, and they get thicker, and they get thicker. And then she's sitting on that thought of insidiously insisting on overstaying. So there's that kind of, when am I going to be over this? And I like the last two lines because they work well with the first two because now the brain has actually come into view because it wasn't up top. That's all about the heart and the yearning of the sexual tension. The last two is where the mind actually kind of hits in. I repel the everlasting like two magnets of the same polarity. Mind is actually trying to insert itself into a field of where the weeds are. And there's some confliction there.
I love that comment. That was stunning in the way that you drilled down into it, but not just taking her words at face value, but seeing how there can be this kind of second meaning, the reason that infatuation is more like an infestation, because sometimes it's not always wanted. That was just really well said, Rex. Thank you. And we do have about 18 minutes left in the show, and I have three poems that I'd like us to get through. So I'm also not going to subject Pam and FaZe to being the last comment because they've both made a comment now in a row about making it hard. So I'm just going to leave that one at that, and we're going to move on to Water the Seed by Poetic Father, and we'll do probably three comments going forward just to try and get these last three in. And FaZe, would you mind reading this one for us?
Sure. Water the Seed by Poetic Father. Water the Seed. You ever had that feeling like eyes from others look at every move you make? It's not their eyes you feel. Nope. It's the seed in your soul. Because don't half the thought we others think of us. Truth is no one really care. Everybody's just trying to do their own thing. It's that ego we have within makes us feel out of place. But truth is, we were never born to fit in to begin with. Water the seed. Learn to move from the wetness of all you are. Drip your truth everywhere you go. Let them all just drown. No more holding back. Your shell cracked long ago, so now it's time for you to blossom in the unique flowering soul that you truly are and always have been. It's like that first time that cosmic deposit hit and you had no words to even express what it was you just went through. Just add water. It works every time, I swear. No one can wake you from the sleepy slumber most are in. So get wet and just water you with the blood, sweat, and tears you shed to make sure you get wet and grow. Poetic Father. End poem.
So I think what I love the most about this is that to me it speaks about being true to yourself. So often we have worried about what others think, what others see, kind of like the fool, what is everyone judging me for? And to me, this one calls to be true to who you are. Speak your truth. Let your voice be heard as you are. Be who you are meant to be and grow in your individuality because no one else is going to do it for you. And I think that's something that we all need to remember and do and hear even. So I love this poem. And Pam, would you mind sharing some thoughts?
I would love to. I really like this. First of all, I like the shaping of it, the way it's centered. I like how it's not only about being true to yourself, as you mentioned, but it's about taking responsibility. You know, the person you become is up to you, you know, through books, through writing, through observing, whatever it is that you gain knowledge from, you need to get out there. You need to do those things. You need to see those things. You need to be a part of life and not blame other people for you being stagnant. This is just absolutely thought-provoking, beautiful, and powerful, and very well done.
Beautifully said, Pam. And I do love that you brought up that we have to be self-propelling. We have to put our own initiative into things because it's really nobody else's job to do that. And I think sometimes we get in a pity party. I know I've been stuck in a pity party before, and it was, you know, well, why me? Why this? And sometimes it just takes us getting up and doing it and not making excuses. So I appreciate that. Thank you. And Rex, would you finish us off with a comment on this one?
Well, I had the shape. It's a flower. See from the stalk going from the bottom all the way up. Then you get that little bulb setting where it widens out, and that's where the flower comes from. It sits on top. It hasn't fully bloomed yet, but that's the idea of watering it so that belly does fully open. The idea is you can't be bothered with anybody else says. If you aren't happy with yourself, the only person to fix that is yourself, and that does. He hits on that note with the thought up top in the picture, knowledge of self. If you refuse to do a little bit of learning on your own, a little bit of soul searching, then you learn nothing because nobody's going to give you what you need to know of self. That is something that has to come from within.
That was a beautiful comment, Rex. And I would agree that often we cannot blossom if we are not happy with who we are. And if we aren't, then we are the ones who have to make those steps to reconcile that. Insightful and beautiful. Thank you. I love that. All right. And up next, we're going to read the Beyond by Budo. And Pam, would you mind reading this one for us?
I would be happy to do that. All right. All right. And this is The Beyond by Budo, and it goes like this. Let us steal the moon and partake on a one-way journey to the stars and beyond. You beside me gleefully giggling as we harness Luna's brilliance in mortal hands, fleeting moments of awe and exultations to rise above the consternation and petty human folly and view the world as it truly is, a vast and beautiful marvel of his making with the constellations to light our path as we leave the now, cast off our fears and worries, our fingers intertwined. With never-ending childlike wonder and effervescent smile, we set sail for Orion and embrace eternity beyond. End poem.
Oh, this is a beautiful write by Budo. And Pam, thank you for that amazing read. Faze, would you be so kind as to start us off with comments?
I really liked this. There's something about the connection as they sit beside each other, gleefully giggling, and the hands, fleeting moments of awe and exultations. I thought that was really beautiful, and that they're rising above, because in the picture they're in kind of a hot air balloon, but it also looks like a light bulb. So they're having ideas that bring them above all those kind of faults of humanity, and through sharing those ideas, they can marvel at the beauty that's still left in the world. I thought that that was a really cool interpretation of that, and it's beautiful. I really enjoy Budo's writing.
Beautiful words, Faith. Thank you. And Rex, would you mind giving us a comment?
Sure. There's a touch of spirituality, but it doesn't center on that. That's just an underlying thought. And it hits on the moon is the mainstay. It's looking at that. We often don't think of what the moon does for us. It gives us our currents. It gives us our waves. It gives us the breath of the ocean as it travels the world, and that's what feeds the currents of air, the rainfall, and everything else that we experience across the planet. Plus, it also pulls on us individually as we are 98% water to begin with. So there is that in there. But it also hits on the ease of thought and awe and exaltations, mortal hands, casting off fears and worries. And the thought is that last one, keeping that childlike quality of thought within us, then you can still marvel at the beauty of the moon or look down at a flower that you've never seen before and understand the intricacy that walks within it.
Oh, that was a marvelous comment, Rex. I truly appreciated that, especially the idea that we can see these new details, these new appreciations that with the right perspective and perhaps even the right person, a magic is brought into our lives, even for the simplistic things. That was stunning. And Raconteur, would you mind sharing a few thoughts before we move on?
I thought this was stellar, pun intended. I think she's got a reverence for the emotion of love that's something hinting towards being eternal. Like Rex mentioned, you know, there's a sense of spirituality to it, but you know, also a little grandeur to the universe itself. In this, that you know, he really just respects that emotion and admires it, I think, and it comes out in this.
Oh, that was beautifully said. Thank you for that. And I agree, it does show that kind of respect and emotion that you find in people, in the person that you love. That was a beautiful comment. All right. And to finish off the show, we are going to have the one and only Babbler. And I will give this one a read. A stroll in Griffintown Park. A stroll on a smooth asphalt riverbed in a gaggle of patchwork urban revelers pacing around the park in the center of afternoon, and I cloaked in the throng except for the nose of a particular four-legged beast, eagerly patting, weaving herself this way that her tongue might palpate my legs, a half hour migrating with trout folk in this back stream of panting and sniffing and shuffling behind, just us two together. Joined with invisible threads, no shared language, but that of nearness. End poem. And Pam, will you start us off on comments?
This is beautiful. I like how it speaks on the emotion of being overwhelmed by a crowd, but more important, that connection between a person and their pet, that language that is spoken without words. And I find it beautifully intriguing that the word stroll is all in capital letters, as if it's the whole idea of the words themselves moving in those long strides, as if trying to escape that crowd. And I like the imagery of a half hour migrating with trout folk, you know, just feeling stuck. And it even just kind of gives you that vision of when you're stuck in a traffic jam. And wow, this flows beautifully, and it says so much with just a few lines, and just a wonderful sense of connection. So very well done.
Absolutely. I love the way that she kind of describes that, kind of like you said, a traffic jam. See, I can't even talk, Raconteur. it's too late and my mouth has given up. My tongue is like, nope, I'm going to bed. But I appreciate
in front of your eyepiece. You can't see what you're saying.
Yeah. So I think what I appreciate the most about this, though, is that it does kind of have that idea of taking a walk with your dog in the park, just kind of being there together. I was always amazed by the way that they would be able to, even if they were ahead of me, know where we were going to go without me having to tell them. And usually I try to train them to heel, but, you know, dachshunds are stubborn breeds. And so they're so stubborn. But there is kind of that nearness, that connection that as you're walking with a dog, just kind of weaving around, they're there. They're with you. They're watching you. They get what's going on. You two are a team. And I feel like Babbler really kind of caught that. It's calm. It's enjoyable. And at the same time, it's just a beautiful explanation for an afternoon or description of an afternoon walk. As a dog person, I thoroughly enjoyed this. And Faze, would you mind finishing us off with some comments?
I love the way she describes things. Like, to talk about the path as an asphalt riverbed, and later talking about it like a stream where the people are the fish. And if you've ever seen fish migrating, it's like ridiculously packed. Like, we have salmon that spawn near where I am, and it's actually kind of disgusting. Like, they all end up like on the shoreline, just like so many of them. But I love the way that she describes that. I mean, that stresses me out, the idea of having so many people there, especially right now. But I love her use of language, and she makes it beautiful. You know, it's quite the connection that she has with her dog, and her imagery is wonderful.
Oh, that was a beautiful comment, Faze. And I agree. She definitely has a way of making us feel just what she means, you know, the idea of people being packed together, migrating like trout. They all just kind of go in one direction, bumping into each other, making their way
mindlessly.
And so she just, yeah, she does a fantastic job. And like you, it too gives me anxiety. All right. Well, we only have about 3 minutes left. So I do want to say thank you to Faze and Rex and Raconteur for being here and sharing your voices and your comments. You guys are what makes these shows amazing, and we always do love having people call in. Thank you, Pam, for being the amazing behind-the-scenes magnificent wizard that just gets things done and keeps everybody in line, because I'm pretty sure it would be chaos without you, and, of course, to Phil, who none of this would be possible. And I always like to thank Frank, who was on the board, as well as Neutron, who just kind of kept us company and going, even if their voice isn't on the show. And as always, to all the amazing poets that have written in. We do have, coming up this week, we have Liar Liar, which is looking at the lyre bird for the Wednesday Strange Magic After Midnight with myself and Incoherent Dust. And next week, the Black Lace Diaries, which our contest is up and active, so check it out. And Rex, do you mind sharing what you're doing this week?
Yes. Clive Barker tomorrow, quotes.
Oh, that sounds delightful. And Pam, what about you? You got anything fun?
I can't remember what I'm doing, but you can check out my contest.
And definitely check out the contest in LMP. We have, of course, these shows with Rex, with Pam, myself, as well as with Neutron and Faze. Oh, Faze, you want to do a quick shout out to what you're doing since I've got you here?
I'm doing Cauldron of Ghosts, and it's about how your body is kind of like a magical, wonderful thing that someday will just be a body. But right now it's flesh and electricity, water and memory, a garden where fact flowers into meaning.
So I'm going to need you to send me that link. Oh, what was that, Rex?
What is your meat suit saying?
Exactly. Well, Faye, send me that link. Again, thank you everyone who called in. Let us use their poems and, of course, all those that keep us on the board and keep us going. You guys are fantastic. Until next week, I hope you guys all have an amazing time. We'll talk soon. Bye.
Good night, gang.